Greetings. So we are still pre-gavel. I'd like to introduce Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to take this opportunity to recognize one of our outstanding city attorneys, Catherine Beaumont. Catherine's retiring at the end of this month. This is her last meeting in the box, so to speak, which is what we call our city attorneys over there. And Catherine has just done a superb job. She's been a rock star working for the city and representing the city in very tough, often tough and difficult land use proceedings. And more times than not, she has prevailed on behalf of the city. So we very much appreciate your service. Thank you.
Catherine, on behalf of the whole city council, I want to present you with these flowers and a card.
Thank you very, very, very much. It has been an absolute honor and privilege to work for the city of Portland and serve the council and the many outstanding city employees I've worked with over the years. And all I can say is I am very, very proud to be a public servant.
Great.
Yay.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Oh, that's correct. This is the Thursday 4:20 session of the Portland City Council. Only a few people got the joke.
I feel very relaxed.
We're here all night, folks. There are a few items that I need to read into the record, but first I'll ask Susan, could you call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Udaly.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. So this is our traditional statement. The purpose of council meetings is to do the city's business, including hearing from the community on issues of concern. In order for us to hear from everyone and to give due consideration to matters before the council, we must all endeavor to preserve the order and decorum of these meetings. To make sure that the process is clear for everyone, I want to review some of the basic guidelines, which I hope will help everybody feel comfortable, respected, and heard. We also obviously want to ensure that decorum is maintained. Today there will be an opportunity for public participation. Depending upon how much time we have, and I presume we'll have enough time, people will traditionally be given 3 minutes unless we have to reduce that to ensure that everybody has a chance to speak. In front of your microphone, you'll see a couple of lights. The yellow one goes on when you have 30 seconds. The red one goes on when your time is up. We do ask you to state your name for the record. You don't need to give your specific address unless you want to do that. If you're a lobbyist, we ask you to disclose that. If you're part of an organization, it would also be helpful if you disclose that. Conduct that disrupts the meeting, for example, shouting or interrupting other people's testimony, or interrupting during council deliberations will not be allowed. People who do disrupt the meeting face ejection. If there is a disruption, I'll issue a warning that if any further disruption occurs, anyone who's disrupting the meeting will be subject to ejection for the remainder of the meeting. Anyone who fails to leave the meeting after being ejected will be subject to arrest for trespass. In order to make sure that as many people as possible get a chance to speak, we ask that you not verbalize support or opposition. Please just give a thumbs up or a thumbs down or jazz hands or whatever you'd like to do. But that just helps us move the meeting along. So without further ado, if I could ask the council clerk to read the first item, first and only item.
No, there's two.
Oh, that's right. First item, please.
Are we taking 382 first?
Yes.
Let's take 382 first, because I think we can do that relatively quickly.
382, change the salary grade for the non-represented classification of neighborhood involvement and programs director.
Very good. And I'm sorry, this I should have told you to. We have some business that we didn't quite get to yesterday, but we'll be done with this forthwith. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and City Commissioners. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Nunes. I'm the Classification and Compensation Manager in the Bureau of Human Resources, and I'm here to present the ordinance to change the non-represented salary grade for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and Programs Director from a grade 14 to a grade 15. This process came about by we received in our office a request to review the classification, update the responsibilities of the position, and in doing so, compare the pay grade to see if it was still appropriate. In doing so, we found that it should be raised by one level, and we're here to request that now.
Very good. Any questions or comments on this issue? So, Commissioner Fritz?
We all know that there's a classification comparison study that's underway.
Yes.
Why was the decision made to move forward with this one before the rest of them?
Because there is a recruitment that just came up. And so because we have to do an immediate recruitment for that position, we wanted to make sure that we would be competitive in trying to attract someone with the requisite skills, quality, and background to take on that role.
And Commissioner Daly, could you give me an idea of when the position will be posted?
I can't give you an idea of that.
Because the reason I'm asking is that I've been asking for several of my directors to and other budget offices to be upgraded. For instance, currently there's a recruitment for the Metro Parks director, and that position is in charge of 90 people and pays $10,000 more than the current City Parks director, who manages over 2,000 people and 200. And so other directors have been patiently waiting. I guess in addition, Commissioner Uday, I'm concerned about doing this out of sequence, because it then makes other inequities seem even more stark. For instance, the Portland Housing Bureau, its director is 15. Their budget is 10 times that of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, plus the bond measure. So is HR at all concerned about the effect on other classifications?
Well, we are committed, and we know that our citywide non-rep study is going to address any inequities that may or may not exist. So taking them as a whole, we know if, for instance, this change somehow makes the rest no longer in balance, we know they will be addressed.
And do we have a sense of when that's going to be finished?
We have a tentative final date, the end of September.
I'd like to add that we do plan on filling the position by July, and that we asked for the class comp study because a significant amount of duties have been added to the job, specifically regulatory duties around cannabis, noise, and liquor. The classification for the director of Office of Equity and Human Rights was raised to 15. It's a relatively small office. I don't think it's unreasonable that after 16 years we do a new class comp for the ONI director.
Actually, the Office of Equity and Human Rights started at 15, and the incumbent is an attorney, so it was felt that that was necessary to get the right caliber. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in your comment, Commissioner Uday. So it's your understanding that specifically cannabis, noise, and liquor will stay within the Office of Neighborhood Involvement?
I don't really think this is part of that conversation, but I don't have any plans to remove it at this point.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps I can clarify, when we look at a classification to decide where it belongs, we can only look at what is there at the time that we review it. So if things are going to move out or other things move in, we don't consider that until that actually happens, and then we would relook at it.
And how much overlap is there between 14 and 15 grade levels? What's the span of how much bottom and top of 14 versus bottom and top of 15?
From top to top, I think it's about a 12% difference.
And what's the HR policy in terms of hiring people? Is it usual to put people at the top of the salary to start off with?
That it varies. When it's an appointed position, it's up to the commissioners or directors, whoever's in charge of that.
Okay, thank you.
I wanted to add one other thing. David Reese, Assistant HR Director. I know that Anna Canwit was interested in the information that you gave to her, Commissioner Fritz, And if there were other situations where we had an opening where there was a recruitment for a bureau director and there was a communication from a commissioner to take a look at that in anticipation of that recruitment, that she would give them the same action that she gave Commissioner Udaly, that she would look at that opening for recruitment purposes in advance of the completion of the class comp study.
Well, it doesn't really give... doesn't seem reasonable to me that we ask our current employees to stay below their pay grade before the recruitment even has been out for this thing. But I did get that response from Anna Camwit, and I know she's out of the country right now. So would you not entertain a motion or a request to change classification before September on the people who are the positions that are already filled?
Well, I think those are going to be looked at. In fact, are being looked at by the class comp study, and that whole structure would be under review. What we've done now is we've taken a look at the current structure, looked at all the comparables internally, and seen whether or not this current classification that was requested is more like the classifications in 15 than in 14. If those are the two eras, that structure could change even as a result of the class comp study, and so. There may be more changes that would come as a result of that.
Can I jump in for a sec?
Commissioner Fish.
So the commissioner in charge is asking for a bump in classification in order to have more flexibility on compensation in the recruitment process, correct?
Correct.
And if there's a candidate that requires, in order to lure them to city service, to get at the higher level, that's fully compensated out of the Bureau's budget, correct? The Bureau has to obviously pays for the compensation costs.
I assume so, yes.
And is it possible, because of the sequence here, doing this ahead of the class comp, is it possible today's decision will impact your recommendations to us in terms of other classifications, or is this wholly independent?
This is really independent of that. I mean, this classification is a part of the overall study, so it will be looked at in comparison to the others. But the other factor that we took into account in even considering changing this was the fact that it hasn't been looked at in a very long time, and a lot of responsibilities were added to the classification. So we didn't just look at what existed. We added and edited the classification itself, so it took on more duties, more responsibilities, since it was originally classified however long ago that was.
Okay, thank you.
And this may be difficult, but based on what you just said in terms of it comes out of the Bureau's budget, do you know if that then has to go as an amendment to the city, to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement's budget to say where they're going to take that money?
I don't know that.
Yeah, I'll check on that. I mean, it's ironic that one of the other roles that's at the level 14 is the city budget office, so I'll have to ask them to look into that. Thank you. I appreciate your answers.
Very good. Any further questions? Is there any public testimony on this item?
We had several people sign up yesterday. I don't believe they're here, but I could read their names.
Why don't you, just for the record, read their names, and if they're not here, they're not here.
Mimi Gurman, Cameron Stark, Joe Walsh, Star Stouffer, Charles Johnson, Teresa Rayford, Sanabe Hart, Shallow Franklin, and Steve Entwistle.
Already those individuals here, not seeing them. This is a non-emergency first reading. It moves to second reading.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item.
Item 391. Amend ordinance that vacated a portion of Southwest Madison Street between Southwest 10th Avenue and Southwest Park Avenue to replace and add new conditions and grant an easement to enable the Portland Art Museum to plan for a new Rothko Pavilion.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, everybody, who's come out today, this afternoon. This is an important item, and the potential action by City Council and it's great to see so many people in our community here. And first off, I want to make sure everyone is clear that this is a non-emergency ordinance, as you just heard, that would amend the street vacation on Southwest Madison Street. In normal language, a non-emergency ordinance means we don't vote today. So it's never been intended that we take a vote today. This is simply the opportunity to hear from the public, to hear from the art museum about the proposal, and then we will vote on it at a later date. And that highlights an important second point also. This street section of Southwest Madison was vacated by City Council in 1968 with the requirement that an 8-foot-wide pedestrian easement be maintained. Hence, it is only the City Council that can amend that requirement. When the Portland Art Museum approached me about bringing this ordinance forward, I made it clear to them that I thought it would spark some controversy and concern, and does fly in the face of some pretty specific central city policies around connectivity and accessibility. They understood, and they made a compelling case that the concept strengthens important central city policies around cultural institutions and innovation. By connecting their two buildings more effectively and creating a more welcoming entrance into the museum, they feel that all visitors will benefit. So this is where we are today. I will quickly turn this over to my policy director, Matt Grum, who's been shepherding this ordinance through the system. And we have Caitlin Reff, who is Portland Bureau of Transportation's capital project manager, who can help answer any technical questions from the council, as well as we have city attorney and land use rock star, Catherine Beaumont. So following Matt's comments and any questions from the council that the council may have at this time, I will invite representatives of the Portland Art Museum to come forward and provide us with a short presentation on their concept, what they refer to as the Rothko Pavilion, and then we'll open it up to general testimony. So, Matt, take it away.
Just a quick question. Caitlin, is this your first appearance before council?
It is.
Well, we have a tradition of welcoming people at their first presentation, so welcome.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Matt Grum.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Council. Great to be here. Matt Grum with Commissioner's Office. This is really neat. I hope you all enjoy this because this is really what City Council is all about. I'm hopeful that we'll hear some great testimony here today. And that's really key, as Commissioner Salzman mentioned. We want to hear from the public about the Portland Art Museum's desire to further amend the easement on Southwest Madison. Commissioner Salzman explained this in his opening remarks, and if you'll allow me, I'd like to quickly expand on that a bit and get you around what we're thinking here and why we're here. When the museum approached Commissioner Salzman about further constraining this easement, we were confronted with how best to have this conversation with the public. I mean, this is a big project for the museum, and as you know well, building in the center city, much less construction impacting a landmark, is a time-consuming and very public process. Therefore, we felt it was prudent to provide the museum some clarity on the specific issue of this easement before they went into that formal land use and design process. And that is important to remember today, that you, the council, are not designing this pavilion and actually could have that issue in front of you in the future, depending on how the design and the Landmarks Commission process unfolds. Today is a focused look at the easement on Southwest Madison and the question of it, can it be further constrained by the museum's pavilion concept? So back when the museum approached the commissioner and his thinking on how best to have this conversation with the public, first off, Commissioner Salzman was intrigued by the concept the museum presented, and we'll see that here in a minute, and felt the cleanest way to have this conversation was to create a non-emergency ordinance that would allow the museum to fulfill its pavilion concept, and that would be the starting point of this public conversation. Commissioner Salzman also knew it was important to immediately inform some of the most engaged public around this, and fortunately, in February, the Bicycle Advisory Committee and the Pedestrian Advisory Committee were having a joint meeting. Commissioner Salzman was able to quickly fill them in on the idea, and then when council would be here considering it, and actually as a follow-up to that, PBOT staff and the museum staff attended last week's Bicycle Advisory Committee and had further issues to discuss and talk about. All of this has now culminated in this hearing, and as I began with, hopefully some great input from the public. Finally, to quickly conclude this and, of course, answer any of your questions, I will hazard to guess what happens after today. You will all no doubt have some different ideas, questions, potential requests, and so I would anticipate that staff from all of your offices would join PBOT staff, the city attorney, and myself in addressing those and ultimately deciding how we move forward. And obviously that won't happen in less than 1 week, so we wouldn't bring this ordinance or what I would expect could be an amended ordinance back next week, but would look for an appropriate time within a month or so to come back for your further consideration. With that, I will shut up and answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Not yet. Okay. Why don't we hear the panel?
Okay. Yeah. So I'd like to now invite up Executive Director and Chief Curator Brian Fariso, Director of Education and Public Programs Mike Murawski, and Chief Advancement Officer J.S. May from the Portland Art Museum. Gentlemen, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, Councilors Udalay, Fish, Fritz, Saltzman. I really appreciate your time this afternoon. I'm Brian Fariso, Director of the Portland Art Museum, and today I'm asking the Council to approve an amendment to ensure the success of our proposed pavilion. 125 years ago, the founders of the Portland Art Museum recognized the importance of art and education for our burgeoning city and state. With our proposed pavilion and master plan, we are reaffirming our founders' vision in planning a very significant investment in our community's cultural life to ensure the museum and its vital mission thrive today as well as for the next 125 years and beyond. When I was appointed director in 2006, I articulated three priorities for the museum. Firstly, art would be at the center of all of our activities. Secondly, we would provide access to all, regardless of economic means or cultural status. And thirdly, we would be accountable for dollars donated and be financially transparent in all of our transactions. As I reflect over the last decade, much has been achieved in fulfilling these priorities. Through exhibitions and programs, the museum has celebrated humankind's finest artistic achievements from antiquity to the present and from throughout the globe, bringing Oregon to the world and the world to Oregon. We have welcomed over 1 million visitors for free or at a significantly reduced rates through free admission for children 17 and under, free admission for veterans and their families, quarterly free family days, first free Thursdays, $5 Friday evenings, and $5 admission to all Oregon Trail cardholders. Strong financial stewardship and transparency have earned us the trust and respect of our community, evidenced by the private support that provides the major portion of our annual budget of nearly $17 million a year. In all, since 2006, the museum has welcomed over 3 million visitors of diverse backgrounds and incomes, truly becoming the museum a resource for all and not an attraction for a few. The museum campus is composed of the main building and Mark buildings. Designed by celebrated architect Pietro Belluschi in 1932, with subsequent additions in 1939 and 1970, the main building houses galleries for the collections, exhibitions, and an auditorium. The renovated Masonic Temple became the Mark Building in 2005 and includes galleries for modern contemporary art, event spaces, and offices. Visitors currently access the Jubit Center for Modern and Contemporary Art in the Mark Building via an underground passageway from the main building. Unfortunately, because of the concealed nature of this passageway, only half of our visitors are able to find the center, which houses iconic works by Monet, Van Gogh, Picasso, Brancusi, and Graves, among others. The proposed pavilion will offer visitors a greatly enhanced experience by creating connections across four levels and by bringing visitors deeper in to the historic Mark Building. A new modern and contemporary gallery will be added. The library will be made more accessible, and access to visitor amenities will be enhanced. The pavilion will be named in honor of Mark Rothko, one of the most influential painters of the 20th century who grew up in Portland. The gift that enabled the pavilion to be named after this world-renowned artist also allowed the museum to secure a long-term loan agreement of masterworks by Mark Rothko on a rotating basis. This association is transformational for the museum, the city, and the state, and it has already garnered national, international, and regional attention. The pavilion, which is an extension of our free access initiatives, is designed to add space for art and education, enhance the viewing experience, and create a welcoming, free public space. Its design is efficient and elegant without unnecessary extravagance. The board and staff and donors to date believe the proposed design, unlike others we have explored, is a perfect solution and is critical to our ability to meet the needs of our growing, evolving, diversifying audiences that consistently exceed over 350,000 people a year. The view from Park Avenue shows the artistic use of glass in the design, allowing the structure to serve as a visual invitation to the community to access many of our offerings. It will be open for museum visitors and pedestrian traffic during all business hours, including Mondays. The view from 10th Avenue shows a new entry from the west and those disembarking on the streetcar and an improved courtyard for art and outdoor sculpture. Because the pavilion connects the two buildings, it is not possible to have an open walkway running west to east along the side of the Mark Building as it now exists. The entire space must be enclosed, secured, and temperature regulated to protect the art. We also recognize there is some concern about enclosing Madison Street between Park and 10th Avenues, but we truly believe the benefit of this grand, free public space of over 5,000 square feet benefits the community in a deep and meaningful way. We are very grateful to our neighbors and community partners who have expressed their support. Ultimately, the Portland Art Museum's celebrated collections, programs, and staff reveal the beauty and complexities of our world and create a deeper understanding of our shared humanity. We seek to be a museum for all, inviting everyone to connect with art through their own experiences, voices, and personal journeys. The proposed Mark Rothko Pavilion is an essential part of our ambitions to welcome all Oregonians, and I am hopeful that you will look favorably upon our desired ordinance modification. Thank you very much. It now gives me a great pleasure to introduce Director of Education Public Programs, our leader, Mike Morosky.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners, and the engaged citizens and friends that have joined us here this afternoon. And for the record, Mike Morosky, Director of Education at the Portland Art Museum. I am proud to speak about the growing education and community impact of the Portland Art Museum here on our own city and region, and how this proposed expansion and the public space included within that expansion would enhance and expand these efforts, as well as bring our community into the very core of our museum campus. Each year, approximately 60,000 adults, families, and children attend more than 150 educational programs offered by the museum. These range from artist talks and lectures to family art-making, public drawing festivals, jazz concerts, and special programs reaching underserved audiences. Each year, more than 30,000 students visit the Portland Art Museum through field trips and school programs, connecting with our collections as well as engaging special exhibitions like the current Constructing Identity, which includes work by more than 80 African-American artists. Each year, more than 600 teachers and educators participate in professional development at the museum. We just had over 100 on Tuesday. Through these programs, we're not only serving art teachers, but we're reaching those teaching language arts, social studies, math, and science as well. Each year, the museum works with more than 450 schools and community organizations across our region. More than a third of these are located in neighborhoods with a household income below $40,000. It is these school and community partnerships that we've prioritized since I became Director of Education nearly 5 years ago, and I'd like to highlight just a few of those examples of partnerships. Our work with schools, teachers, and families is so much more than the numbers. Last Wednesday, for example, through a growing partnership with Portland Public Schools, the museum hosted for the second year in a row the Heart of Portland Celebration of Arts Education and the Arts Tax. As a PPS parent myself, I was proud to be there and shine a spotlight on more than 480 student artists, musicians, and performers, ranging from kindergarten to high school seniors. And I want to thank all the citizens of Portland for their support of the Arts Tax, which is making all of this possible. And the image that we see here, this is Miss Robinson's first grade class, music class from Boise Elliott, alongside Nassim Kent, a second grader at Vernon Elementary, proudly standing by his work that's on view in the student art exhibit, which is on view at the Portland Art Museum until Saturday. It includes a work of art from every school in Portland Public Schools. This event and student art showcase all occurred within our Mark Building, We imagine all of this happening in the proposed pavilion, right in the heart of our city's art museum. Hundreds of young artists and their families, their community, gathered to celebrate the creativity of our city, clearly and proudly visible to everyone walking by and walking through, an expanded student art showcase on display in a public space like the Community Commons, where everyone can connect with the next generation of artists and creative thinkers. Connecting on a more global scale, the Portland Art Museum is now entering its third year of a partnership with Portland State University and its Middle East Partnership Initiative, or MEPI, program. This competitive program of the U.S. Department of State invites leaders from countries across the Middle East and North Africa to develop leadership skills and expand their understanding of democracy while visiting the United States. While at the museum, students explore issues of artistic expression and cultural identity through art on view in the galleries. And they're able to bring their experiences here in Portland back with them as they implement cultural and civic engagement programs in their home countries. We're also entering our fourth year of a partnership with Adelante Mujeres, an incredible organization dedicated to educating and empowering Latina women. The museum works with participants in their Chicas Youth Development Program, focusing on cultural identity and academic success. And as we expand our work with Latino communities across the Portland region, we envision the proposed pavilion being a central way to publicly celebrate Portland's cultural diversity in broader and more meaningful ways. From these smaller, more intimate partnerships to engaging much larger audiences, the Portland Art Museum is committed to being a hub for arts and culture here in the city. This has been so wonderfully achieved through our partnership with Literary Arts, hosting the citywide literary festival Wordstock. Through onstage events, workshops, book fairs, children's activities at last year's festival, the museum welcomed 7,000 people through its doors on a single day. Instead of book enthusiasts and their families scrambling between buildings, galleries, event spaces, underground tunnels, the proposed pavilion would transform our museum's ability to increasingly be a hub for these citywide cultural events, bringing communities together around the arts in an open and connected way. The Portland Art Museum strives to be a museum for all, as Brian mentioned, inviting everyone to connect to art through their own experiences and voices. A new partnership with the Museum of Impact has opened up new conversations and relationships with organizations here in Portland focusing on equity, inclusion, creative expression, and community building. These partnerships expand the museum's role around some of the social issues facing residents here in our own city. We're envisioning the ways the new public community commons space and education spaces within the proposed pavilion can serve community needs and bring diverse voices into the center of our city's art museum. And finally, on a more intimate note, the museum is now in its third year of a close partnership with the Alzheimer's Association, offering programs to people living with dementia and their care partners. Called Art Now, this program powerfully connects people to people, using art as a catalyst to change people's lives. This picture is Bernie and Mark. I love them. A recent participant of this program told us that a single visit to the art museum made a bigger difference for them than months and months of expensive experimental treatments. We're constantly hearing these stories in which the museum is helping make this city a better place to live. Community involvement and engagement is core to the museum's proposed expansion and pavilion. And next week during Design Week Portland, the museum is beginning a series of community conversations to help envision the potential of this community commons space and pavilion and ensure that we're focusing on removing barriers and thinking broadly about ideas of connection, participation, and community involvement. So in closing, after being involved with the museum for the past 5 years, I'm so proud of the work we're now doing to become an essential part of our community and to have our community see themselves as an essential part of this museum and its future. Thank you so much for your time, and I would like to introduce our Chief Advancement Officer, J.S. May.
Thank you, Mike. J.S. May, Chief Advancement Officer, Portland Art Museum. As you can see from this slide, looking towards the Mark Building, and from this side, looking back towards the main building, leaving an 8 to 10-foot open-air easement between the buildings would result in a pavilion that doesn't solve the problems of connectivity between our two buildings that it is designed to address. And designing in gates or some other type of barrier would create security issues that would detract from the goal to create one of Portland's grand public spaces and the museum's main entrance. And finally, we've been asked how we will let people know this is a public space. First, through its name, the Community Commons, and through signage, communications, and programming. Just as we do now with our current access programs, we actively work to have people sample the museum, and approximately 100,000 people do so already through our admissions access programs. The Rothko Pavilion will simply enhance our ability to make the Portland Art Museum be everyone's museum. So, do you have questions for us?
I have a couple. Thank you for your presentation. J.S., could you remind us what all of the public processes you're required to go through as part of this? So you're here on an easement.
We're here on an easement, and then we will have the landmarks process on the actual design itself. So that's where the design review process occurs.
Okay. And do you have any issues that come up under the comp plan?
I don't think so.
Okay, so it's primarily landmarks, design, and easement. Are those the...
Yes.
And okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz?
My understanding is that bicycles will not be allowed to go through here. Is that the proposal?
That's correct.
And why is that?
Because there will be doors that are airlock quality because of the need to protect the art and the flow of air within the building.
And I also understand that no animals other than service animals.
Correct.
So actually there is some testimony in the record about the comprehensive plan, in particular the West Quadrant plan and our street connectivity requirements. Would you care to address those?
I don't know the details deeply on those, so I'm not the person to address that.
Okay, and my understanding is that the Planning and Sustainability Commission has not yet held a hearing on this. Is that correct?
Well, that's correct, and the Planning and Sustainability Commission would hear a hearing if this were a street vacation, but as I indicated, this street was vacated in 1968. So this
right.
is simply a modification of that.
I believe
so
we
I don't
do have
it a... needs to go to the Planning and Sustainability Commission.
Well, we have a request from them to be able to weigh in,
yeah.
particularly since the Bicycle Advisory Committee, the Pedestrian Advisory Committee, Oregon Walks, and the Committee on Portland Commission on Disability are all asking not to approve this. So would you care to address any of those concerns?
There are definitely people who will be inconvenienced by the pavilion in the hours that it's closed. We can't deny that. The pavilion will be built to all ADA accessible requirements so that people, when the building is open, they will be able to walk through the building. The fundamental question here, I think, is for the City Council to consider is the greater good of the city served by the pavilion being a destination for people and a public space, or is that not the case? So I think that is the crux of the issue that is before you as a group.
Well, there is a public space there now, which is really lovely. So
yes.
The question is...
And there will be an 8-foot easement within the building. As part of this also.
And what hours are you proposing that easement to be open for?
At this point, we're looking at museum hours, which would be 10 to 5 Monday through, or Sunday through Wednesday, 10 to 8 Friday and Saturday. I mean, Thursday and Friday.
So much less than the current easement allows
yes.
public right away.
Yeah. Currently, the easement, we have the ability to close the walkway from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m.
So, colleagues, one of my concerns is particularly about bicycles, that this area is being north of Jefferson. The cyclists are supposed to be on the sidewalk. If they're on the street, they can ride their bikes, but they're not allowed to ride their bikes on the sidewalk. So that's quite a... If people are concerned about going east-west on the adjacent streets, they wouldn't be able to walk their bicycle through the pavilion. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And by my calculation, the distance from the streetcar stop to the Historical Society or, let's say, Schnitzer Hall, just for example, is the exact same on the streets adjacent to the museum. It's the same amount of steps.
Commissioner Fish?
J.S., I want to go back to the another way of looking at this. And by the way, you're going to stick around so that after the testimony, if we have questions about things we've heard, alternatives, we can come back.
Yes. I think so, Brian has to go to a meeting, but I'll stay here throughout.
Okay.
Happy to stay if you think it's appropriate.
I think you have a good team. So, my perspective on this museum, which I consider to be a jewel, is that your current entrance is a mess.
Yes.
And it presents several problems. First is I'm not sure it's very accessible, and I want you to address that. I want to find out what – I'll come back to that. Number two, once you come in, it's a crowded space where you kind of snake around to get a ticket. And number three, in order to gain access to the to your newest collection of modern art, you actually have to go downstairs and then figure out your way up. Mm-hmm. And so there's tremendous barriers. So put aside the question of, you know, whether this pavilion's the best possible option and the easement. Talk to us for a moment about what the enhanced customer experience is through this new pavilion versus your existing entrance.
Well, currently the entrance at the Beluski building, the 1932 building, is completely inaccessible. There are historic stairs there that and gates which date back to the original building. So the only accessible entrance that we have is coming through the through the courtyard and then through a ramp which comes up between the stairs leading up to the Hoffman Wing door and the space that we affectionately refer to as the cage. So there is a single walkway up through there. So that's really the only accessible entrance into the museum proper itself. The new facility will be accessible from both Park and 10th and be really easy for people to figure out how to get in. In terms of customer experience, you will come into this. Right now, one of the real challenges of our building is that you can never find the stairs. All of the stairwells are hidden. Our proposal actually moves the loading dock from the its current location over to Southwest Jefferson, and the existing loading dock, which is also in the courtyard, becomes a four-story stair tower. So when you come into the main building, you'll actually see the stairs, so you'll understand both vertical and axial transportation throughout the building. So it'll be a dramatic improvement for visitors as they're trying to figure out how to get around the building.
And I'll add one other thing. You know, Pietro Beluschi designed a masterpiece for us in 1932, and that design is very much based on an axial architecture. You can see long vistas through the galleries. It's a very rational, clear indicator when you enter the museum of how to go from space to space. It's considerably disrupted when we added the Mark building through the underground passageway. What the architects are trying to do now is build off the greatness of what Beluschi designed and create an axial experience for our visitors, and in many ways giving them a sense of comfort and ease as they're in the museum, as they walk through and can see where they are, rather than a cacophony of spaces that causes a lot of angst.
What if you get the green light for this vision, what happens to the sculptures that are currently in the sculpture garden?
Right. So the sculptures in the sculpture garden will be added to the various plazas outdoors where they are now. So the new design has two plazas, an east plaza and a west plaza. In those plazas will be sculptures.
And then you can basically think about the Madison Street vacation in thirds in terms of the museum experience. A third will be building, a third in the back will be the 10th Street courtyard, and a third in the front will be the Park Avenue courtyard.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Public testimony.
We have 29 signed up. I'll call three at a time. If you'll please come up when your name is called. Marsha Hawker, Arv Smith, Tom Nielsen. And they'll be followed by Wendy Rahm, Doug Klotz, and Judith Marks.
I knew you looked familiar, Mrs. Hawker.
Point of privilege, Marcia Hawker is the beloved spouse of George Hawker, who served the city of Portland with great distinction. She is also the voice of KMHD Radio. And most importantly, she is one of the early Miss New York Subways, which was a great honor in its day.
So we had 29 people signed up. Now we only have 7. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor, and good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Marcia Hawker, and in addition to being a vocalist, an arts advocate, and radio host here in Portland, I am a member of an education chair for the PDX Jazz Board of Directors. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify on behalf of the Portland Art Museum. I've had the pleasure of working with the education and public programs team at the museum and have experienced firsthand the powerful effect that great art and great community partnerships can have. The museum's current exhibition, Constructing Identity, featuring African-American art, is a fine example of how art sparks conversations and celebrations. Through these authentic connections and true partnerships, the museum is welcoming an increase of visitors, including thousands of school children, in a truly meaningful way. Exhibitions like this and the resources they provide to teachers allow kids to see themselves reflected, to experience different perspectives, and appreciate their differences. I have attended family free days, lectures, and music events that are overflowing with people. Imagine what more the museum can do with added space and facilities to accommodate visitors of all ages and abilities, and how many more partnerships would be possible. I understand that our Portland Art Museum is nationally renowned for including community voices in many aspects of their work. I've seen evidence of this in a big way, and I hope that you will consider a vote in favor of this proposal that will expand community access, engagement, and diffusion of knowledge. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Can you come read all the testimony here from now on?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, City Commissioners. My name is Arvie Smith, and I'm an artist educator. I've lived here for a little more than 40 years, and I taught at Pacific Northwest College of Art for over 30 years. And I'm glad to be here today to support the Portland Art Museum and their expansion project. Brian and Mike earlier spoke about the powerful means of exposing our humanity, the power that art has in exposing our humanity. Art requires us to see from another person's perspective and confront our differences and similarities. I have been honored to have my work shown in the Portland Art Museum, and as a Northwest-based artist, I appreciate their commitment to collecting and presenting Northwest art. With my work, I try to combat racial stereotyping, which is never benign, and tend to exaggerate negative generalizations. Over the past year, I've had the opportunity to connect even more closely with the museum. I had an exhibition of paintings depicting lynchings of black people, police violence, and images of black negative stereotyping by the media. Portland is a very white city, and museums can be seen as places of white privilege. But the Portland Art Museum embraces the opportunity to invite people of all colors to engage in conversation about race, history, and current events. I gave free gallery talks and lectures, participated on panel discussions, and spoke at partner events in the courtyard. Museums are changing to reflect their communities and the world around them, and the Portland Art Museum is doing this in an inclusive and authentic way. While the proposal before you today is about glass, concrete, and steel, the impact will be warm, welcoming, will be a warm, welcoming place for our community to gather and create shared experiences. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, my name is Tom Nielsen. I am a patron-level supporter of the Art Museum. I think the concept of the Rothko Pavilion is exciting because it helps address many of the connector issues between the two museum buildings. I also know that, for many reasons I trust you will hear about, maintaining the current public easement across the Madison Plaza is also very important. The public easement reinforces the pedestrian-friendly, interconnected, livable city that the city's planning processes have worked so hard to reinforce. I believe there must be a design solution that would allow an 8-foot-wide public passageway to stay open across the plaza while solving the identified connector issues between the museum buildings. A group of us met with museum executives over a year ago on April 3rd when we were first shown the Chicago architect's design for the pavilion. At that time, and on numerous occasions since then, I and others have reinforced our support for the project conceptually, but the request for them to go back and develop an alternative design that would allow the continuing public easement across the plaza. Our requests have never been taken seriously. The design has never been altered. And I think the museum has felt they could just push their way through the city's planning processes. I ask that the City Council reinforce with the museum the importance of the current easement and suggest that they pursue an alternative design that accomplishes what they need while maintaining the public passageway. Then instead of having a room full of citizens who are objecting to the project, they could have a room full of enthusiastic supporters promoting the project. The museum is not listening to citizens. Hopefully they will listen to you.
Thank you.
And the next three, please. Wendy Rahm, Doug Klotz, Judith Marks, and they will be followed by Robert Wright, Mary Vogel for Oregon Walks, Philip Hilaire.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Do you want to talk a second?
Mayor and commissioners, I'm Wendy Rahm. I'm an art museum supporter and patron donor and served several years on a council board there. I believe in the value and importance of arts in our city. However, I cannot support the Rothko Pavilion proposal and believe no change in the existing ordinance is necessary. Within existing ordinance conditions, the museum can build on the second, third, and fourth floors and achieve its building connections and programming goals. This would leave Madison Plaza largely as is, a gathering point and oasis in our neighborhood. This would allow the continuation of unenclosed, barrier-free local connectivity that is easy transit for those with disabilities, those with dogs, both service and companions, cyclists walking their bikes through the passage, and pedestrians of all kinds, including moms with prams. Madison Plaza connects the South Park Block's Cultural Entertainment District with the dense West End neighborhood and the 10th and 11th Avenue streetcar stops at the museum. The plaza is a critical part of a larger pedestrian system. The museum proposal to both close and enclose the plaza would create a super block and a physical and psychological barrier. There is a ring of elitism to it. A person getting off the northbound streetcar at the museum can now walk 6 blocks straight to City Hall. If the passage were closed, that same trip becomes 8 blocks, all with traffic, which could mean a person with disabilities just might not go. There is an alternative. A museum sky bridge is not a new idea. It has been used in museums in Wisconsin and the Netherlands. There is nothing in city code that bans sky bridges. The design guidelines recommends against them in an effort to increase pedestrian traffic. The irony here is that the museum design will decrease pedestrian traffic, not a goal in the 2035 plan for this area. You have a traffic study for those hours when the museum will be closed. One example is a Wednesday in May last year. During hours when the museum was closed, there were 677 pedestrians, including 10 with disabilities. Connectivity, barrier-free and open passage for all, a cultural and neighborhood iconic oasis, accommodating those with disabilities are just some of the reasons to save this plaza. Please oppose any changes to existing ordinances and ask the museum to revise the proposal to accommodate existing conditions. Everyone can be a winner here. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Judith Bieberly Marks, and I live across from the Art Museum. I'm a member of the Portland Art Museum and the Film Center, and frequently attend various area theaters. The reason I chose to live there is because I enjoy the cultural events nearby. I also chose it because I have COPD and can walk to so many of these things. I cannot stress enough how important the Madison Walkway is to my life and independence. If it were closed for most of the morning and evening, it would have literally breathtaking consequences for me. The additional blocks around the museum may be an inconvenience to others, but could prohibit some outings for me. Enough about my health. My training as a planner affects my world and neighborhood views. With open spaces disappearing around town, I feel it's important to save the precious plot next to the museum. I see the Madison Walkway from my window. To borrow from Dr. Seuss, oh, the sights that I see. Commuters rushing to jobs, perhaps in this very building. Backpack students heading to St. Mary's or PSU. Parents pushing strollers towards Safeway. Workers heading to alfresco lunches on the park blocks. Later, a steady stream to and from streetcars and other parts of the area. Commuters rushing back home. They all contribute to the area's rich life. They also serve a more important function. Urban planner Jane Jacobs wrote, "Eyes on the street make for safer neighborhoods." I worry that closing the block between 10th and Park can change travel patterns, leaving the area less peopled during the morning and evening. That will make it more inviting to those who operate in the quiet shadows. Please encourage the museum to come up with a design that will keep Madison Walkway open and well lit by voting against this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Thank you. My name is Doug Klotz. I'm a co-founder of Oregon Walks. I have been a 25-year member of the city's Pedestrian Advisory Committee.
Thank you.
I'm just speaking for myself, but I do support their position. I urge you to reject this amendment to the vacation ordinance. Since 1968, the public's been allowed to walk through this passage originally 24 hours and then cut back to 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. In 2011, the Elliott Tower across the street also built a public passageway between 10th and 11th. So it now becomes a longer connection, the Art Museum being here and the Elliott connection being there. So it's a whole several block passage, and I sort of indicate routes that you can take from there. The Elliott passageway is like that. And you can see the Art Museum in the background. Wait a minute. That's the other way. That way. There's the Art
there
Museum.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anyway, so that's that. Is building a building across the plaza, it's going to look like it's a private thing. I don't know how many people know there is another building in downtown Portland that you're allowed to walk by public easement, clear through this, in the glass doors, out and one through and out the other side. But no one would ever know that. There's no signs. It doesn't look public. That's the U.S. Bank Tower. It was a vacation of Ankeny Street, but you'd never know it. So it just doesn't work that way. And I think the Art Museum should go back to the drawing board. And there are precedents. People have been mentioning them. This is the Chazen Art Museum in Madison, Wisconsin. So you can, they have an open public plaza through there. They have a connection at the upper level. I think they may have one below too. The Art Museum could, as was noted before, connect not just the second level, but the third and fourth. And they could connect at the ground level. I don't know how many museums where they give you a little button to put on your shirt, and you could walk out a door, go over and walk in the other door. I don't understand why the current modern art section doesn't have a door opening onto that plaza, so you can just go across at grade level and go in the door.